a quibble about a grown-up adult who knows what a ghost trap is wanting to open a ghost trap. And welcome back to another episode of Exposing Ourselves. I'm Travis Ritchie, and this is episode 58. This is the show where we expose each other to new things. Matt, a big music fan, will assign me one of his favorite music artists to listen to each week, and I, a movie buff, will give him one of my favorite films, and we come together on this podcast to discuss it all. And with me, as always, is my very good friend,
Matt Rundquist. Hey, Travis. I swear I thought you were going to say he's going to assign me one of his favorite podcasts every week, which I was like, no, it's not. You hesitated just a tiny little bit, and I was like, is he going to say podcast instead of artists?
I thought the word was bands, and now it's music artists. Yeah, and I think maybe artists. That was an early change, and I got tripped up by myself.
Well, anyways, I watched a movie this week. I watched Ghostbusters Afterlife, and you listened to
Ska Band.
Oh,
hey, Matt, what was the band I listened to?
That's funny. I get that joke, because the band was the Interrupters. Yeah, that's funny. And now you're Travis Interrupter, so you could be in the band.
Awesome. I love that.
Oh. Have you been waiting all week long to do that joke?
I have. I thought of that early in the week. And I was hoping so much that you said the movie first, because usually you say the movie first, but I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. So here we are, just exposing the magic.
Here we are.
Everyone knows that the more you dwell on a joke, the funnier it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. 100%. That is
so how was your week?
You know, maybe we could explain the joke. I hear that's good, too.
No, let's not.
Okay, let me, I just got back from Easter at my sister's house, and that was a lot of fun. Got to see my daughter, who lives in Madison now, so I don't see her every day. And of course, she's going to be moving to France in the fall. Plans are firming up a little bit there. It's looking like early September-ish is going to happen, so.
Cool.
That's good.
Are you going to help her move?
I am considering flying over there. I don't know that I'll necessarily be a help, other than maybe I can be the chaperone of an extra suitcase, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'll just take, like, a backpack with a couple of changes of clothes in it, and then I'll check a giant suitcase for her.
Nice. That helps.
Yeah, that's sort of a help. But we'll see. We'll see how plane tickets are and how, you know, work schedules are and all that. Other than that, I'm starting to get ready for my song release. It's working its way through the distribution queue and everything and getting approved by the various things. Then I'll start promoting it, probably actually starting tomorrow. It's still a good 3 weeks before it comes out, April 26th, 3.5 weeks. So I've got a little bit of time, but all of these publications do like a fair amount of lead time when it comes to new music coming out. And like I said, I'm excited. I'm hopeful. Then maybe it'll get played. Maybe it'll get played on the local radio station. It probably won't, right? But and I won't be crushed if it doesn't, you know. But I'm gonna commit, right? I'm gonna put myself out there. So, other than that, things have been relatively quiet over here. So, how about you, Travis?
Well, you know, honestly, I have very little memory of the past week because I've just been working a ton, and I was very sleep deprived. Starting on Monday, I had to wake up. I had a 6 a.m. call time, so I had to wake up at 4. But then I was working both jobs like almost every day, and so I would 4:30 I woke up, and then but I didn't leave my second job until 9 p.m. and then had to come home, feed Coco, eat dinner, and go to bed in time to wake up again the next morning for like 7 a.m. call time. So I was I slept in this morning for the first time. Today is like my first day off, and I call it a day off, but I'm still doing stuff. Like I had a business call earlier, and I have this, and it's like my day off is still dealing with, you know, doing some things.
Are you one of those people who's able to sleep in even if you've been getting up super early? Like you're just able to. Yeah, see, that's not me. I am very much like I get up right around 6 a.m. every day. So for me, sleeping in is like 6:30. My brain won't let me sleep past that. I can, you know, I can come downstairs and lounge on the couch for an hour or two.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll doze off a little bit. But this idea of like, well, I got up at 4 a.m. yesterday and I got up at 10 a.m. today. I can't do that. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my body won't let me.
Yeah. What I am very grateful for is that I have a dog who is quite content to sleep in with me. Because, you know, you hear those stories about people who are like, my dog wakes me up at 6 a.m. every day.
I'm
like, oh, no. Not Coco. She is fine to snuggle in bed for as long as I want to.
It's funny because with four dogs, we have three of them. Well, we have two that are up, right? And then we have one that's kind of like, I could get up, I could stay in bed. And then we have one who's like, I would like to be staying in bed longer than these other dogs. But I guess I'll get up if you're all up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and there was one, at least one big, well, a couple of big things. I got my car back, and I'm a little peeved about it because they called me. I managed to fit in a hike, a couple hikes, actually, and I was on one of them when they called me, and they're like, hey, your car's ready to pick up, and I'm like, great, so what was the deal? What did you do? And they're like, oh, we didn't do anything. And, like, we didn't fix anything because we couldn't find any problems. And I was like, how is it that the guy who, when I checked it in, had this little plug-in computer thingy that he plugged into the car and then plugged into his computer, and it literally took him 10 seconds to be like, oh yeah, there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you can't find a problem. So I'm a little upset. We'll see if it continues to have the problems I experienced. And I will say that I did finally get the rental, not rental, but like a loaner car from them to use for a while. And the driving experience of that was very different. Like, driving that felt like the way driving an electric car should be. Like, I charged it once at the beginning of the week, and then by the end of the week, I'd done a couple of hikes. I'd gone to the store a few times, driven to work on the rainy days, and it was down less than 20% for my, you know, charge. And so I was like, that's the way it should be. So anyway, putting that aside, I've got my car back, so we'll see how that goes. But the other big news was at work, they gave us at the Apple Store a sneak preview of Sugar. Like, they sent out a link to
like,
check it out. And so I was able to confirm.
And you were all like,
yeah, I was able to confirm that it is that I'm not cut out of the episode. So so that's great. And I also, so by the time this goes up, it'll be up on Apple TV. So if you're listening to this now, you can go to Apple TV, check out Sugar. Yep. And the first episode, I'm kind of right in the middle of the first episode.
Well, Travis, what do you say we get into the meat of the episode?
Sure, sure. Let's get to the meat. I think this is going to be a fun episode, just based on my own experience. What do you want to do first?
I think so, too. I really enjoyed both items this week. Let's do the movie first. Let's do the movie first.
All right. Great. Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Ghostbusters Afterlife. Ghostbusters is the movie that I loved the most as a child. I think I remember being 7 or so and sitting on the porch watching my parents drive off to see this movie and being devastated that they went to see it without me. And then, I don't know, a year or however long later that it went up on TV, I recorded it off the TV, and I watched that TV version of Ghostbusters every Sunday for at least a year. So I've probably seen that movie at least 50 or 60 times. And I saw the sequel when it came out, loved the sequel. I bought the DVDs and discovered all the things that I had missed from the televised version, like the made-for-TV, you know, version where it was pan and scan, but also, so I missed some jokes from the framing, but also the redubbed, like, not even dubbed, they filmed different scenes and different dialogue for
things. I didn't know
like
that.
When they swear. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that movie means so much to me. That's all that to say. And then the 2016 movie came out, and I was not a fan. We don't have to get into why, but I was really excited when they announced this 2021 version, Ghostbusters Afterlife. And it was actually, I think, supposed to come out in 2020, but pandemic happened. And so it got pushed a little bit. But it was directed by Jason Reitman and produced by him and his dad, Ivan Reitman, who directed the first two. And so there's a real pedigree of that old, you know, the original crew. And they actually use a lot of the same special effects style that they from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Jason really wanted it to be an homage to the first movie, yet a continuation of the story. And yeah. The way they do it is they focus on Egon's estranged daughter and mm-hmm. her kids,
mm-hmm.
and kind of like, I don't know. I we'll talk about more of the story. I really, watching it over, was struck by how good the acting was. The script was really solid. The special effects are evocative of the original, but also they take it to the next level. Mm-hmm. That's not to say it doesn't have its moments where I have issues with it, but overall, I think it did a great job. And one of the things they had to contend with was the death of Harold Ramis, who played Egon.
Mm-hmm.
And he died, you know, several years before. And so they actually utilized that in the story, and I mm-hmm. think to great effect.
I really liked this movie a lot. And it's funny because, unlike you, I did enjoy the 2016 version, and my big complaint about it was simply that it was telling such a similar story rather than trying to break new ground. It kind of reminded me of Episode 7 of Star Wars, where they were like, let's tell the same story but with different people. And that, I don't think that's ever like totally successful, because it ends up being a lot of, you know, like the same jokes but worse, right? And I liked the movie because I find the actors that were in it very charismatic, and I enjoyed it, and I'm probably less invested in the Ghostbusters story than you are. But this movie does such a wonderful job of telling a continuation of the story of the first and second Ghostbusters, rather than trying to pretend like they didn't exist, or that it's like somehow the same world but also not the same world or anything like that. It is unequivocally set in the present, not in the past. And it has a similar visual language, like you were saying, but it's also totally different. It's out in the country instead of the city, and there's a little mystery at the heart of it. And there, yes, it's family and moving on to the next generation. So all of that I really, really liked. It definitely made me sort of like the 2016 movie less, because I was like, yeah, that was a little lazy, wasn't it? So, I can talk a little bit about what I liked about this, but honestly, I'm super curious about this, because I know what a huge movie Ghostbusters is for you, to the point where I bought the Ghostbusters DVD or Blu-ray a couple of years ago, because I found it on sale somewhere, and I like watched the original again, and I was a little disappointed that it didn't super duper hold up for me.
Really?
I mean, not bad, right? But I just, like, if you had asked me before I watched it again, I would have been like, oh, Ghostbusters, it's a 10, right? And I watched it again, and I was like, it's like an 8. Right? Like, I liked it a lot. I wouldn't be mad if somebody put it on, but there were enough things in it that I was like, oh, I don't love that. And I don't love that. And everybody's maybe just a little too smarmy. And there's a bunch of things, and I don't want to get into the details of it, because we're not talking about that movie. But the point is it's not what it is to you, right? For me.
Right.
But this movie, I feel like, takes that and brings it into the present, and largely succeeds. So yeah. I'd like to hear what you thought of this sort of in detail.
Yeah, so it's I want to start just even at the beginning of it. They start with this scene that is action-packed and dark and kind of gritty and a little bit scary, where Egon is on his farm and it's all in shadow, so you don't really see his face. You kind of, I think you know who it is. Did you know who it was?
No.
Okay, great.
Nope,
interesting.
I did not know who it was.
Good to know. And but he is fighting a ghost and he's got this, you know, and he ends up getting killed by smoke and a terror dog, right? And so, and then they cut to New York and or wherever the East Coast, and it's this mom, Carrie Coon, I think her name is the actress, and her children are played by Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things and McKenna Grace, who I was not familiar with.
Okay, not to jump in, but I'm going to jump in. You remember a couple of weeks ago when I was like, that Stranger Things actor with the cool name, and then it turned out it was just like a totally normal name? It's because I was thinking of Finn Wolfhard, which is quite possibly the greatest real person name I've ever heard in my life. Yep. Finn Wolfhard.
No, you're right.
That is – how could you not succeed with a name like Finn Wolfhard? Anyways,
it is a pretty cool
Grace
name.
Grace McKenna, also a very – or McKenna Grace.
McKenna
very
Grace.
Good actress,
yeah.
Yes.
And she, I don't know if you listened, I mean, we're jumping all around here, but she wrote and sang, like, the song that was in the end credits. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed that, but...
Yes, I did notice that.
Yeah. She's a special actress, and for her to be so present and believable and really grounded in this is only succeeded by the fact that the other kid they got who plays podcast is also incredible. Like, they managed to have this pair of kids, and Finn Wolfhard is also a kid. He's like 15 or 16 when he did this.
Yeah.
And so, or at least he's playing that old.
Yeah. And he does great.
Yeah, and he does great, and they give him stuff to do, and they do give everybody something to do, which I really like. And and they also introduce Paul Rudd into the universe, which, listen, if I'm going to choose someone to not be me to play in the Ghostbusters universe, I am fully in support of Paul Rudd. And here is, again, jumping a little bit back to the 2016 commentary, is that maybe the biggest problem I have with that movie is that you have these amazing actors doing a lot of improvisation. And one of the strengths of Ghostbusters, especially the first one, is you also have a lot of actors who are very strong improvisers. I mean, I assume Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and, you know, those guys are come from comedy. But it's a very tightly scripted and well-scripted comedy. And I think that even though you can be writing jokes on the fly and doing that stuff, it is not a Bridesmaids. It's not an improviser's medium for a movie. And that was my biggest problem for the 2016. And here we are in this Ghostbusters Afterlife movie, and you have, again, a very tightly scripted movie, and you have wonderful comedic actors able to translate that script into really funny dialogue. And also it's touching. You have a story that is about family and about coming to terms with estrangement and making connections where you didn't previously have them. And I think that theme is really well presented here. And like you said, it's a continuation of the story. So here we go. We get a big fan will see the that opening scene where the truck is rushing from the mountain and breaks through the gate, which, by the way, why was the gate locked if the truck had gone into the gate? One of my flaws. We'll get to a couple others. And but it pans up or pans down, and you see the name of the mine is Shandor Mining Company. And those who are fans will have remembered Ivo Shandor as the architect of Dana Barrett's building.
No, I did not remember that. Yeah.
You have to be a fan. You have to be a super fan. And I absolutely was. But details like that were speckled in to make me go, but they weren't harped upon or like as someone, I'm assuming, and maybe you can answer this question, it wasn't something that was overwhelming the fan service, right?
Yeah, no, I didn't feel like I was dropped in the deep end at any point. And obviously, I'm very familiar with the first two movies, right? I was born in 1977. I like that is, you know, Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, you know, those are like the heart and soul of, you know, after school television for years, right?
So yeah.
I'm very familiar with them, even if I'm not steeped in the lore of them. And I didn't feel like I felt like I enjoyed the things I recognized, and I didn't feel like, oh man, but I'm totally lost here. This tells a really good story that just happens to have a lot of references to the original stuff. I did not peg Paul Rudd and, what is her name? Carrie Coon as the Rick Moranis Sigourney Weaver couple until it was like happening. And then I was like, oh, obviously. Right. Like it was one of those things where it just locked right into place without you being hit over the head with it. So that was really, really good. Incidentally, I don't think you watch nearly as many English dramas or Julian Fellowes shows as my wife and I do. So you might not know that Carrie Coon is one of the stars of The Gilded Age on HBO. Or Max, I'm not sure which. Like one of the primary, like above the title stars.
Interesting.
Of that show, she's really good, and this is a wildly different role for her.
And she's great.
Feel like knocks it out of the park. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I was a little bit wondering why it is she gets first billing out of everybody, especially when you have Paul Rudd in it, and even Finn Wolfhard coming off of Stranger Things, but he's not the star. But you know, I would say McKenna Grace is even the bigger star of this movie.
She's, I think, the star of this movie for
sure. Right. She carries the whole thing. Yeah.
You've seen like press photos of McKenna Grace, right? Like her, oh my gosh, yeah, do a quick image search of McKenna Grace. She's like a young blonde actress.
Oh, really? And she doesn't look at all like this, right?
She doesn't look at all like that. And the fact that she so comfortably embodies the role of Egon's granddaughter is unreal, because I obviously picked up on the fact that they were talking about, you know, Grandpa is one of the Ghostbusters, but it took me a moment, and then I was like, oh, yeah, oh, she's playing Egon, right?
Yeah, she even has his glasses.
Yeah, she has the glasses and everything. That was a little over the head, for sure. Like, where she actually physically holds his glasses up to her glasses. Like, I'm pretty sure she could just glance at him and realize that they're the same ones.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, she absolutely carries this movie. I think this movie doesn't work without a knockout performance from her, and we got it.
Yeah. And I remember when I first saw it, I was a little bit, I walked away from it not being sure if I liked the idea that the movie got laughs from literal jokes that she would tell. But having her, I mean, her jokes are actually funny. Some of them are.
Dad
jokes. But the way her delivery is perfect on most of them. But then also having her try to distract Gozer by telling jokes is a wonderful setup. Like, it pays off that whole joke-telling thing very well. Did you catch J.K. Simmons as Ivo Shandor, by the way?
Yes, I did. I sure did.
What a cameo is that? Like, just a
one shot. It's funny though, because it's like, that's the J.K. Simmons character, right? Like, obviously that you know, that was the first name on the casting director's like, oh, well, we should get J.K. Simmons for this. Like, this is a J.K. Simmons role for sure.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. I loved Ecto-1 came back. That was great. I loved the mini Marshmallow Man.
You know, I did like a lot of the references. I did like Ecto-1 coming back. This kid fixing Ecto-1 that's been clearly sitting in a garage for a super long time, and it having a full tank of gas, and like there was some of the action sequences
with gas in it. We didn't see that part.
There were some of the action sequences with Ecto-1 that were maybe a little more vigorous than was entirely believable. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, and they did invent a couple things. So they invented this ghost trap that is on a go-kart. Not a go-kart, but a radio-controlled car, right? So
an RC car, yeah.
Sure, that's cool. That's for the merchandising. I can deal with that. It's not that big of a deal. I will say it was really cool to finally see Ecto-1 and the chair that swings off from the side, which I think we originally saw in the real Ghostbusters cartoon, but here it is live on the.
Yeah.
It's very cool. I do have a gripe,
really
though.
Really slick. Oh, what's that?
One gripe about the way the proton packs work. And the idea is a proton pack holds the ghost in place so that you can trap it.
Right. So why are they getting dragged around by the proton pack? Yeah.
Right. Why? Yeah. And why when you're on the car and you're shooting the ghost – and you catch the ghost, why don't you stop the car?
Yeah. Yeah, that actually was a big problem for me as well. Because, like, there were a few times in this movie when I was like, the proton packs aren't doing anything. They're not doing anything.
So what is the point of the proton pack if that's not what it does?
Yeah. Yeah.
So and that's my last gripe.
I'll give my other negative
What's your other one?
Well, just some of the CGI wasn't perfect, you know, which is it's a harsh read, but like it's true. Like I said, especially the sequences with Ecto-1, there were a few times when I was like, well, that's an animated car.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. I didn't notice any of those.
Yeah. And then I'll be honest, I felt like it was just a little bit joke light, right? Like that there were times there's long stretches of this movie that are completely jokeless, and you know, I could have stood a few more jokes. That being said, the stuff at the end of the movie where the original Ghostbusters come back was very affecting and beautiful, but it did really change the movie in a lot, like in a way that I was like, oh, they're kind of doing cameos here rather than like being a part of this movie. And I didn't love that. Like the Dan Aykroyd phone call where he just info dumps at her was like, wow, this is clunky, you know, but these are really minor reads, right? Like, oh, the mood slightly changed when the old guys showed up. Okay. You know, like, yeah, that'll happen. I didn't hate it. It just, when I was thinking back on it, I was like, oh, I really like these new characters that they've introduced, and they're doing a really good job, and they're telling a really cool story, and then these guys show up and then kind of hang out for a little bit. You know, it just didn't, you know, and then they all got together and won at the end, and that was great. But, like, you know.
I really liked the passing the baton-ness of that, and it was touching. I cried a little bit, you know, with the whole Harold Ramis thing. And I thought that it was done really well, which I just really quickly want to talk about
how jacked Ernie Hudson is.
Well, no, but I wanted to talk about the new Ghostbusters that just came out and how it kind of does a lot of that same thing but wrong.
Okay.
And
passing, you mean?
Because you have once again the original Ghostbusters showing up as cameos or Ernie Hudson's in a bit more of it, and then I guess Dan Aykroyd is too, and then Bill Murray just shows up at the end a little bit or once in the middle, so I guess they're all doing a little bit more, so maybe that solves your problem. But I just felt like The new one had way too many characters, first of all. There was no way to give any of them anything interesting and substantial to do. And it didn't have the same heart that this one, that Afterlife had. And so I was happy to actually see that one because I saw Afterlife in theaters, really liked it, but also was like, do I love it? And then I saw it again when it came out on video because I bought it. And then I saw Ghostbusters Frozen Empire like a week or two ago. And now coming back to this, somehow it actually made me appreciate this movie even more.
Yeah. And
how, yeah, and the subtlety of it.
It's
and
a
the,
really
and the, and
delicate
the
thing. There were a lot of jobs that they had to do for this, and they did most of them, right? Like, is, like, all, you know, spoiler alert, this is not a 10 for me, mm-hmm, but boy, they sure did an awful lot of really great stuff in this movie, and I liked it, yeah, a lot.
Me too. No, it's a movie that I would definitely, if I had a Ghostbuster trilogy night and this was the capper of it, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, what do you think? You want to give it a rating?
I do want to give it a rating. I've gone back and forth a little bit, even in this conversation, but I'm going to stick with my original thought for this, which is this is a 9 for me. Like, I really nice, really enjoyed it. I had to think actively about what quibbles I had, right? There was no point in the movie where I was like, oh, man. Like, there were quibbles that I had, and they were legitimate, but they were also, they're just not that big a deal. This is a fun, yeah, movie to watch, and I will watch, yeah, it again.
Yeah, me too. I think for me too, it's a 9. It did make me laugh. It made me cry. I was going to raise a quibble about a grown-up adult who knows what a ghost trap is wanting to open a ghost trap. but then I'm like, you know what? What would I have done in that situation? And I probably would have tried to open the ghost trap. Even knowing what kind of ghosts generally were caught by the Ghostbusters. So,
yeah.
It is an interesting thing that this movie introduced into the universe that ghosts are not always scary, demonic creatures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for Harold Ramis to be a ghost in this universe really opens up something, and that they do explore that in the next movie a bit. But I thought that was an interesting addition to the
Yeah, canon. Because let's be honest, that makes more sense, right, than all of them being, you know, demonic evil in origin, right? It makes mm-hmm. sense that some ghosts are going to be benevolent or at least not actively harmful.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. One other tiny little thing I just want to ask you about. It just the very slightest of gratings for mine. They decided to make Gozer look like Gozer from the first movie, right?
Yeah.
Same costume, increased the special effects budget on her a little bit, which is
kind of
cool.
The dog things look the same too.
Yes, they all look the same. Yeah. But they changed the race of the actress playing her.
Okay.
And I don't know why if they did that for a reason.
I got to admit,
it seemed like an obvious change to me, and I don't know why they did that.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Okay. So I'm just a little bit racist? Okay.
I was like, she looks just like the first one, so I don't.
Oh, okay. If you thought she did, that's all I need to know. That's satisfying to me because I didn't think she did, and it was a little distracting. That's all.
Oh,
okay, great. Awesome. Well, I'm happy you liked this so much. Tell me about the interrupter.
I'm happy I liked it. I'm happy I liked it so much too because we've been on a little bit of a dry spell. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I just interrupt you?
You did the thing. thank you. Yes. Tell me about the interrupters, Matt.
Well, I'm not just going to tell you about the interrupters. I'm going to tell you about ska, because this is the first time we've explored ska. And part of that is because I've never really liked ska. It's fine, right? It's always so ska is kind of adjacent to punk in the U.S., and I've always been a punk fan, but I've never really been. So some bands like really incorporate a lot of ska into their punk, and some don't at all. Anyways, so the Interrupters are a band that have been around for around 10 years. It's three brothers and one of their wives, although I think they got married after the band started. And they're really good. They play ska punk in the American tradition. But ska as a genre came around in 1950s Jamaica. It actually predates reggae, which you're familiar with reggae, right?
Well, and I'm glad you're talking about this because I was going to ask you about ska origins, and I was detecting a lot of reggae in a lot of this. So that's fascinating.
There's a lot of ska in reggae, because ska predates reggae. So the two big musical things that ska sort of stands out for are the syncopated guitar, so the the guitar on the upbeats, right, does a bump, 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 and then the walking bass line. So like a walking bass line, if you think about it, it's like right there. They're sort of moving through the scale, right? And it's very distinctive when you know what you're listening for. Right. So ska came around in the 50s and it's been through a couple of it's like a lot of Caribbean music. It sort of goes through waves of popularity where it kind of gets incorporated into popular music in the United States for a while and sort of stewed around with the other influences and then kind of goes away for a while. And in the 90s, it came to the United States through punk. Right. And so the punks sped up the tempos. Right. Added a lot of horns. Right. So a lot of the bands that you think of that have and there's a bunch of horns in this and they and played maybe with a little more distortion. And so sort of added those like punk, you know, verse, chorus, verse thing and maybe a little bit of yelling or more energetic vocals. And and so made what is ska punk, right? And this album, I super duper got into the song Raised by Wolves about 6 months ago. And Raised by Wolves is very much in the pop punk tradition. There's very little ska about it. But if you listen to the rest of the album, which is what we did this week, there's a lot of ska to the point where there's one of the things about ska and Caribbean music is that there is a lot of like sort of their version of Christianity in it. And so you talk about like the, you know, there's nothing super explicit in this, but just the way that they talk about like rising up the people and the, you know, I'm not sure how much you listen to the actual lyrics, but there is a little bit of that tradition in this, not a ton. Right. But just maybe two of the songs have that. So there's like ska, there's punk, there's a little bit of this sort of like vague religiosity. That's not it's not like going to, you know, a charismatic church on Sunday or anything like that. But it's just part of they stew it all together. And I just really, really like this. There's this joke on the internet. They say ska is the music that a seventh grader hears in his head when his mom lets him order mozzarella sticks, right? The blaring, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. There's like the horns are going off and there's lots of dancing around. And there's actually a dance called skanking, which is kind of, it's kind of like this really dorky dance. But they do it for ska and it's kind of fun to do. Maybe we could have a little we can have a little dance off at some point off the call. And I don't know. So anyways, the point is I haven't historically liked ska, but I really like this album. And so I wanted to introduce it to you because I was like, this is a great window into something that I have not exposed Travis to at all. So I know that was a very long intro, but
no, it's fascinating. Thank you. I'll just jump right in and say, I loved this also. I had a great time listening to it. Is there a grunge influence in ska, or is that just a
not really separate? It's sort of, you know, they're around the same time, but grunge and ska punk never really crossed the streams at all. Grunge really kind of comes from more of the hard rock heavy metal tradition and then bringing in like slower sludgy elements to it. This is its own thing.
Not that. That's interesting because I feel like when I was in high school, in the art room and the kind of the emo kind of ska kids got to choose the music and they were playing grunge and ska. I think, I don't know. It's so long ago.
No, that I think that there's some overlap in their audiences, but in terms of musical influence, they're don't cross the streams.
And so anyway, so this music was, the only thing that was not appealing really was the kind of vocal grunginess to the vocals. And so that's why maybe grunge popped into my mind as a possible influence. But I will say, Matt, this is a fun album. There is so much to like. And I have traditionally not been a huge reggae fan, mainly because of the slower pace of it. Like when you when you listen to you know, some of these Bob Marley and those guys that are, you know, famous, I'm just a little bit like impatient when I listen to music like that. And this type of music really scratches that itch for me. And but also I love the instrumentals and the inclusion of drums and horns and different kinds of instruments that sound inventive, but also it's not slapdash, put it all together willy-nilly. It's and I've used this word before, but maybe not in a while. It's a little orchestral in its composition.
Yeah,
very purposeful, and I really appreciate that. And so the songwriting in this album is there's diversity in the song types. I will say one thing that was a little challenging was that the fast beat, kind of upbeat tempo, maybe was too many songs in a row. Song, the album ends with a really touching ballad called Alien, or I'm an Alien, or something like that. And I kind of wish they'd put that in the middle just to break it a little bit, just to give your brain a rest and then give you some more upbeat music.
Sure.
But other than that, man, I listened to this a couple of times, two and a half times, I think. I started again today, and I was working my way through it, and was perfectly happy to put it in. And I appreciated it more each time. The first time I got a little numbed to the, you know,
to the speed of it.
Yeah. Exactly. It was a little. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where we had an album that was like every song individually was fantastic.
Yeah,
and
St.
Great,
Paul and the Broken but then, Bones. Yeah,
but too much ice cream was the problem, and so this album almost suffered from that in my first time around, where my brain was numbing a little bit.
Well, and it's funny. I mean, if I had to pick something that's kind of my read on ska in the past, like why I didn't feel like it was, you know, for me, it would be like, it's very frenetic a lot of the time, right? That's the joke about the seventh grader eating mozzarella sticks, right? It's like, it can be like, here's the horns and here's the fast guitars and here's the fast drumming and here's the singing. And like,
and is the dance move to ska just jumping around?
No, man, it's skanking.
Oh, okay. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels like it might be a lot of jumping around.
I think your assignment for next week is to look at YouTube and skanking videos.
Okay, will do.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, because I was a little vague with the burden or with the religious stuff, I'm thinking specifically of the song Burdens. There's a thing about if it gets too heavy, you got to bring the... it's going to bring you down to the ground, lay your burdens down, down, down. And that imagery is very similar to religious imagery about, you know, Jesus, right? And how, you know, let Jesus carry you and lift you up and, right? And it's very, very subtle, but it is of the tradition, right?
Early
reggae, early ska, you know, there's songs about
a little bit of that early gospel
Jericho
music too.
Yes. There's like a sort of a crossover between gospel. And I just like that this band, which is, you know, very, very modern, still has like connections to that tradition, even if like, I have no idea what their particular religiosity is. And I'm not particularly religious, but I like that they're not just pulling the heart out of the music and being like, hey, look at these fun tempos, right? This is very much of the genre, and I like that a lot.
Yeah. There was two songs that I really liked that kind of had a similar message, but different takes on the idea of burdens, right? And so I love the one that you're talking about, where they're like, "Hey, if you're overwhelmed, lay your burdens down. You don't have to carry it all the time." And that I really liked. And then the other one was earlier on in the album was "Kiss the Ground." Like if you're down to the ground, sometimes the only thing you can do is kiss the ground. And bless I was it. Like, "That's an interesting message," and I really liked it. It's poetic. It's but also has some deeper meaning. So,
yeah, it's funny, stuff. Right? They do a really nice job of that thing that you and I have talked about so many times, both in my songwriting and in the music that we listen to, where it's a balance between telling a story and metaphorical, lyrical poetry, right? And it's a really nice balance. And like, I feel like I know what all these songs are about, but I don't feel like I'm being beat over the head with a bad message or a dumb message or anything like that. Like, it's all really good.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you a lot. Yep. I don't think there was a weak song on this album. A couple of times I was listening and I was like, I had that experience where like, wait, didn't I hear this song already? Where maybe they were very similar. And maybe there was an actual callback because I didn't listen enough times to really know the album well.
No, but there are times. So I've listened to this album probably 20, 30 times in the last 6 months. And there are a couple of songs that you're like, oh, yeah, I like that. Oh, wait, that's not that one. That's this other one. Right.
Okay, good, good. That wasn't just me.
Yeah, that's not just you.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. This was your own discovery, right? This was not a recommendation from a fan.
I think the song "Raised by Wolves" came up on like the random playlist, which YouTube Music. Side note: YouTube Music is the successor to Google Play Music, and Google Play Music was fantastic for discovering new music. You'd put a song in that you liked and it would play you a dozen songs that you'd never heard before that were super duper good and from tiny little bands, right? Huh. Now you put a song in that you like and YouTube plays you a dozen songs that you've heard before and have played before. And it's very frustrating because it's like, no, I want to discover new things. Anyways, the point is they'll play you 11 songs you've heard before and one you haven't. And this must have been one of the ones that I hadn't heard before, and I like latched onto it. I mean, "Raised by Wolves" is so catchy. It's so catchy. It's like such a simple chord progression that just pulls at you. It's very, very common chord progression, but it's common because it's good. And I got into that song, and then I kind of was like, well. Now, I didn't realize how ska, that is really a pop punk song. There's very little ska elements in it. And so I listened to the whole album and I was like, oh, this is like ska. And then I was like, okay, but I don't hate this,
Yeah.
And the more I listen to it, the more I think, oh, God, I really think this is one of the best albums of 2023. It's really, really fantastic.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Thank you very much for exposing it to me, to it. This was a lot of fun.
Either way. Cool. Well, Travis, would you like to give it a rating?
I would. And I think that this discussion's actually improved it in my estimation. There are a couple of tiny quibbles. Mm-hmm. And I think that maybe I would have liked the voice to be a little bit or the vocals to be a little bit more clearer instead of a rough.
She has like a really were. I would say a earthy voice, I don't think it's a bad or a good thing. It's just whether or not it's your cup of tea,
and you do get used to it, I will say that, but it took a while to kind of like settle into it, and I think I'm gonna go with a 9 for this. Very, very good.
Wow.
I could definitely see myself picking it up at some point, and it's upbeat. I like that. It's cheerful. The poetry, the lyrics are great. It's a well-written album. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. How about you? Well, this is a 9 for me, Travis. It's 9s all the way down today. The movie, the music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, everything is 9s. Yeah, no, I love it. It's not a perfect album. I will say this. If I was just judging like ska music, right, this would be a 10, right? Because I don't generally like ska, and this is like maybe I should check out more ska. But for me, it's not perfect, but it's very, very good. So I'm going to give it a 9.
Nice. Excellent. Well, what have you got for me for next week?
Next week, I have a band that was recommended to me by one of the people who wrote in, but it's one of my, at one point, it was really one of my favorite bands. I haven't really kept up with them, but there's a band called Arcade Fire. Have you ever heard of them?
I've heard of Arcade Fire.
Yeah, I think we might have actually mentioned them once or twice on the podcast. They are, God, I don't even know what genre I would call it, kind of orchestral or operatic rock. Like, it's rock, but it's like epic. Like, we're going to do epics. And their first album is an album called Funeral. And it's epic and awesome, and I really, really like it. I am a little concerned that this is one of those albums that you need to listen to a couple of times in order to, like, really get into it. But I'm hopeful that you're going to like this. I wouldn't say it's upbeat, but the tempo, it's not like dirgy tempos or anything like that.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Good.
What do you have for me, Travis?
I actually didn't know until right this moment. But I think because my
this
list
is a joke, people,
short.
Because every week I have Travis's planned out. A lot of times I'll have him planned out a week or two in advance. And every week Travis is like, right now I just decided.
That is
one of the many, many contrasts between us. But anyways, what did you decide right now, Travis?
Did you see Knives Out?
I didn't. And I should have because
I think it was supposed to be really successful. Watching. Yes, and Knives Out was a movie that was directed by Rian Johnson, who did Looper, which we watched together, and also another movie that I have on my list called Brick, but that was an older movie of his. Did you see Brick?
Well, and he did a movie that you didn't like, but that I did.
Oh, you liked the Star Wars movie he did?
Yes, we've had this conversation.
Yeah,
I
no, you're right.
Like
now that
Star
you say
Wars
it, movie. I remember. Yeah. But oof, man, yeah. I did not like that movie.
You know why? I think that movie doesn't necessarily succeed as a movie, but what it does is it succeeded in trying to break Star Wars out of the bad habit of just telling the same story over and over again.
Yes,
you know?
Indeed.
And that's what I like about it.
I'll give you that. And I will say that Rogue One did it better. And sure. And so if you haven't seen
that's
Rogue
fair.
One, have you seen Rogue One?
Oh, I have. Yeah.
Okay, good. And then Andor, the series, goes even further, and it's great. So, but I'm going to have you watch Knives Out. What is Knives Out, you might ask? Knives Out is a murder mystery starring Daniel Craig and a slew of other people. It's got a great cast. We'll talk about it next week, but it is just, it got a ton of attention, and I kind of avoided it because I was coming off of my distaste for his Star Wars movie. And sure. So it took me until the pandemic to actually watch it. And there is a sequel now that's out that is a second movie, and I will have you watch.
You know, I actually heard about that a little bit, and I heard he was a little upset that it was branded as a sequel because apparently it's just another murder mystery that
it's the same character, so it's like uses the same,
but
it's like another that's exactly the detective I was gonna bring up, yeah, or like a Sherlock Holmes mystery or something like that.
Yeah,
it's, you know,
yeah. And so he's seeing I remember him being a little upset that it was branded as a Knives Out mystery.
Oh yes,
or
I get what you're saying.
Because
it should be named after is the detective instead of the very interesting, although I guess the first one made a lot of money, so well, I can't wait to talk to you. And also, I'm excited to revisit it because I've only seen it the one time, and I remember liking it. So I'm excited to see it again.
Well, cool. That should be really fun.
Yeah. Hey, I mentioned before if one of your suggestions was, if the album suggestion was from a fan, and it wasn't, but what should a fan do if they wanted to suggest an album or a movie for us to watch?
Oh, well, this, so first of all, Arcade Fire Funeral is definitely suggested by a fan. But if you want to suggest something for me to watch or Travis to listen to, you can write to us at exposingourselvespodcast@gmail.com, or you can drop by our Facebook page, search for Exposing Ourselves, it'll pop right up, and then you can comment, and you can be like, hey, you should watch this, you idiots.
That's good. And definitely call us idiots. That'll get us our attention. Yeah. That'll get our attention.
Yeah.
All right. For sure. Hey, Matt, thank you for exposing yourself to me.
Well, hey, Travis, thank you for exposing yourself to me.